get started, everybody. So today,
what's for coming?
Thank you so much, Rabbi Willigan and Rabbi Wiederblank, for having me. It's such a comfort to be with you. Thank you. Okay, so I was told that we should try to blitz through a lot of the halachos of the Seder in a half hour. So we're not going to get through everything, but we'll try to go through some of the basic halachos of Seder night. Yeah, we're covered here. Some of the basic halachos of Seder night. And that way, at least, you know, as you're experiencing the Seder, hopefully you'll have a better idea. Now, one pro tip is that whatever Haggadah you're using, a lot of times it actually does explain what's going on in the Seder at that point. So sometimes you just need to read a little bit during the Seder to really understand what's going on. Last night my daughter was going nuts because she had an assignment that she was supposed to find out which half of the matzah you're supposed to put away for the Afikoman, the bigger half or the smaller half. My wife said, open a Haggadah. Open any Haggadah will tell you, right? The Yachatz, which one you put away for the bigger half. So anyway, let's start with some of the minhagim of the Seder. There is a minhag that a person, the Taz quotes in Siman, Tafayin Beis Sivkat and Gimel, that a person should wear a white garment at the Seder as a sign of Cheirus. He also points out that you wear it as a sign of remembering the Yom HaMisa in order not to get carried away with the joy of the Seder. So this is the minhag that many people have, that they wear a kittel at the Seder. They say that the Beis Yisrael, the Ger Rebbe, said that when he would take off the kittel at the end of the Seder, he would say how fortunate he is now because he's able to take it off at the end. There's going to come a time where he wears a kittel that he's not going to be able to take it off. Meaning that's to be maskir, the Yom, I mean, he was passing like that second day on the Taz, that the purpose is to be maskir, the Yom HaMisa. The idea of it being a sign of celebration, also we find in Shas, the Gemara in Tainus Dav Chavav, the Mishnah tells us that lo yom tovim Yisrael ke chamisha asur ba yom kippur mel chamisha asur ba'av. The Chamisha Asur Ba'av was a very happy day, and what would they do? The girls at least would wear white, that apparently wearing white is a sign of some sort of celebration. So you have these two opposite ideas in wearing a kittel, that it's a sign of celebration and simcha, and it's also a sign of avelus. So there are basically two categories of people that have a shaila about wearing a kittel, and that they are also in opposite directions, an avel and a chasan in Shana Rishona. When it comes to an avel, the Taz and the Alter Rebbe and Shulchan Aruch Rav also say that since the main reason is to remind you of the Yom HaMisa, the Avel should wear one because he should have Yom HaMisa on his mind all year. However, the Bach and the Magen Avram say that the Avel already has the Yom HaMisa on his mind. He has it on his mind plenty throughout the year, and therefore he doesn't need a kittel. And the Mishra Berura says that the minhag is better not to wear a kittel unless you know that you have a minhag to yes wear a kittel. And Avel and Shana Rishona does in the year of Avelus rather, does not wear a kittel. What about a chasan in Shana Rishona? I was just at a Shavu Brachos on Wednesday night, and the chasan came over to me and said, do I wear a kittel or do I not? I said, I don't know, do you or don't you? Meaning it's dependent on minhag. So where would that come from? So many have the custom not to wear one because it seems inappropriate for a chasan in Shana Rishona to be thinking about Yom HaMisa. He should be thinking about happy things. It would hinder his ability to be sufficiently happy in Shana Rishona if he's wearing a kittel. Maram Shik says though that if the wife wants to be mochel on that, she can be mochel and he can wear a kittel. Rav Yashiv is quoted as saying that if he has no known minhag, which is usually the case, that the guy doesn't know what his minhag is, then he taka should wear a kittel if he doesn't know what his minhag is. I suspect that the minhag of a chassan not wearing a kittel shon rishona is based on the universal practice that when you go to your in-laws for the first Seder, you forget your kittel at home. And that's universal. That's across Sfarim, Ashkenazim, Yekis, everybody. So since you forget your kittel at home, so of course you're not going to wear your kittel. Sfarim taka don't wear a kittel anyway, I think. They don't have this minhag of wearing a kittel. There is a minhag that some chassidim have, and others also, not to wash the kittel from the Seder night, that they want to show up to Yom Kippur with evidence of the mitzvahs, that they still have matzah crumbs and wine spills. So look, I did mitzvahs the whole year, and I'm ready to come. There's a famous comment of the Netziv in his Haggadah Imre Shefer that gives a third reason for wearing a kittel, and he says that it's a beged shel kavod that you wear for Achilas Korban Pesach. So we don't actually eat a Korban Pesach anymore, but we have the Afikoman that's a Zeichel Pesach, and we're going through the whole Seder So wear a kittel as a zecher to the special kinds of begadim that we would wear. Another minhag that we have at the night of the Seder is brought in the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Tes, and it's Korban Shulchan Aruch in Tafayin Beis of Tezayin, to give candies to children. And there are two reasons. First of all, you don't want them to fall asleep, because the whole idea is to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of teaching the Sipur Tzias Mitzrayim to the children. And second of all, you want them to ask questions or to pay attention to all the stuff that we do differently on that night, and that will lead them into the Manishtana and everything else. So to keep them awake and to keep them interested. And candies will do both until they have the sugar crash after the sugar high, but hopefully that will come late enough in the night that they will have gotten the gist of the story at least by then. Then there are certain mitzvos on the night of the Seder that we have. There are many mitzvos on the night of the Seder. One of the mitzvos that just hovers over many elements of the Seder, and then maybe hopefully we'll get into some specifics, is the mitzvah of Heseba, that a person is supposed to lean derech cherus on the night of the Seder. And we lean on the left side, and the reason we lean on the left side, two reasons that are mentioned in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, is because you want to have your right hand free to eat with, or because it's a choking hazard to lean on the right side. Whether that's in fact true or not may be relevant or may not be relevant, but that's the reasons that are quoted. Now that applies equally, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that even a lefty would lean on his left side, because we're more concerned about the second reason of a choking hazard than we are about the reason of having your right hand free to eat with. There is a fascinating discussion whether women are chayiv in a seba. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that a woman is not chayiv in a seba unless she's an isha chashuva. Then the Ramah goes in the other direction and says every woman is an isha chashuva. All women nowadays are considered an isha chashuva, and therefore you think he's about to conclude that they should all lean. And then he says, but women are also mech on the sheet of the Ravya. And the sheet of the Ravya is that nowadays leaning doesn't really show any freedom. No one leans when they're free. They just lean at the Seder. I don't know of any other time that anybody leans when they eat. So since nobody, it's not a sign of freedom in any way, so we don't do, so women rely on that sheet of the Ravya. There's some good Torah about why men don't rely on the sheet of the Ravya and only women rely on the sheet of the Ravya, but not for now. Minhag. The Kaf HaChaim writes that Sephardic women do have the minhag to lean, that Sephardic women should lean, even though the Mechaber paskins that a woman doesn't lean unless she's an Isha Chashuva, and the Mechaber did not say that all women are an Isha Chashuva. Now, when do you have to lean? It's a little bit, uncomfortable to eat while you're leaning. So matzah serves to commemorate the Geula. So the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Ches says that you should lean for matzah. Ideally, when you're eating all your kazesim, however many kazesim of matzah you have to eat. How big is a kazayis of matzah? Ooh, so that's a big discussion. Rav Shechter always tells that his father-in-law, Rav Shechter's father-in-law, Rav Shapiro, was a Rebbe in Tarav Adas. But before he was a Rebbe in Tarav Adas, he was a Talmud of Rav Shimon Shkap. And he used to have Seder about Rav Shimon Shkap, because he wrote Rav Shimon Shkap's magnum opus. His major sefer is called Shari Yosher. And Rav Shechter always says, Rav Shimon wasn't such a great writer. He was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, but he wasn't such a great writer. So there was this young Bacher in Yeshiva who was a fantastic writer. And that was Rav Shachter's father-in-law. So he had to move in with him to write the Shari Yosher. So when he was there, when he was by Rav Shimon, he attended Siddarim at Rav Shimon's house, and Rav Shimon would take a matzah, and he said Rav Shimon was a balmofes. He was able to get five or six kazesim out of a single matzah. He would break it up, and there was five or six. And you look at the charts nowadays sometimes, how big is a kazayis of matzah, and you have to stuff an entire matzah into your mouth at one time in order to get a kazayis. So no, it's not a mofes. It's that he held that kazayis of matzah is not as big as a lot of people make it out to be. Moreno of Willich Shlita also... Senior also did serious cheshbonos about how much is a kazayis of matzah, and what did he conclude? Or the charedim matzahs, you probably have to eat a whole box before you have a kazayis. Those are so thin. Yeah, so there are several kazesim in a matzah. You're supposed to do a hasema when you're eating the matzah. The dalet kosos, the gemara is a machlokas, whether you're supposed to lean at the first two kosos or the last two kosos, either the first two because that's when the whole story is happening, or the last two because that's when we are already free. And the gemara says, since lo itmer hilchsa, lo kamar v'lo kamar, we don't know which one is correct. So EDVD by Yaseba, we do a Seba by all four kosos. So we should lean for all four kosos. Korech also requires a Seba, because even though there's maror in the sandwich, or the wrap, depending whether you use Sfardi or Ashkenazi matzahs, are you allowed to use Sfardi matzahs? Also, machlokas aposkim. So, Moreno Rav Shachter Shlita is makel, says you're allowed to use Sfardi matzahs. Rav Asher Weiss says no. He has a tshuva where he says you're not allowed to use Sfardi matzahs. If you're a Sfardi, you are. But if you're an Ashkenazi, then you shouldn't use Sfardi matzahs. I don't know if Rabbi Willick publicly paskin, but he would never use Sfardi matzahs. He's a very traditional person.
Can you just go over what Sfardi matzahs are?
Oh, what are Sfardi matzahs? Anyone ever show of hands? Anyone ever have Sfardi matzahs? Okay, so Sfardi matzahs are like a lafa. They're soft. Matzahs. They're only soft if you freeze them up until like an hour before you eat them, and then you heat them up. If you just leave them out, then they're like a thick brick, and it's like impossible to eat. But they're soft if you know how to take care of them. They are not chametz, meaning everything is done in less than 18 minutes. They're fully baked through and through. But the argument goes that it's a few arguments. First of all, that korech, the word korech might not mean sandwich. We just translated it as sandwich because there's no other way to make our matzah with our maror other than a sandwich, because our matzahs are brittle and hard. But korech might mean wrap, to wind something around something else. So it's more mistaver that they probably had soft matzahs that they wrapped around the maror and Karban Pesach also, right? So it was like a shawarma. They had lamb and some lettuce, because maror is of course lettuce, and then they would wrap the matzah around that. In fact, there are some that are knowing, because they hold that korich means to wrap, that they wrap the maror around the matzah, because the maror is bendable and can wrap. So that's the argument. Also, there's no iser, meaning Rav Shachter said that he thought that it's not, there's no minhag to have super duper thin matzahs. It's no more than minhag is that the parochas in your shul happens to be red, so you have a minhag to have a red parochas, not a blue parochas. No, it's not a minhag, it's just that's the way that that people made it. The other argument is that nothing is by accident, and the fact that Ashkenazim have been making matzahs very, very thin and brittle, and you ever been matzah baking? Show of hands, how many people have been to a matzah baking? How long does it take to make a single matzah from the time that they knead the dough to the... Way less than 18 minutes, less than 1 minute. They roll it out, they throw it in the oven, and they got to take it out right away, or else the whole thing gets burnt, right? Because it's so brittle. But that's not really the halacha, right? That's a lot of chumras. The halacha is that as long as from the time water comes in contact with flour, it doesn't go unmanipulated for 18 minutes, that then it's not going to be chametz. Anyway, certainly if it's very thick, it's problematic, right? That the Shulchan Aruch talks about. But the Sfardi matzahs aren't very thick. They're less than an etzba thick. And if it's less than an etzba, that's what's the width of your thumb. So they're not that thick. By the way, matzah pizza, way better on Sfardi matzahs than it is on Ashkenazi matzahs. Just okay, but that's not how we paskin halachas. Okay. When it comes to afikomen, also Shulchan Aruch paskins in Simtava and Zayin that you should lean for the afikomen at the suuda while you're eating the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama writes in Simtava and Beis that ideally you should lean the entire meal. Some later poskim say that it's considered more of a bother than a luxury to lean, and therefore if that's the case and it's just becoming annoying to you, then maybe you don't have to lean, because the whole point is to express a certain level of chayrus. If you forgot to lean at any of these points, there are many detailed halachos about whether you need to go back and redo it. The Mechaber holds that if you forgot to lean by matzah, you have to eat it again while leaning, even if you already benched. And you have to wash again, make new brachos of amotzi and alachilas matzah. The Rama says, no, nowadays you wouldn't have to do that, because nowadays you'd be yotzi without leaning. But ideally, you should, if you haven't benched yet at least, you should eat the kazayis matzah again hand while leaning. There's a discussion if you forgot to lean during Dalit Kosos. So it's it's something that one should try to remember to do because it's one of the requirements of the night of the Seder. Speaking of Dalit Kosos, So everyone is obligated in Dalit Kosos. When I say everyone, the Gemara tells us that even though it's a Mitzvah Shazman Grama, women are obligated in Dalit Kosos as well. Tosos and Pesachim, as two deus, he says that since Afin Hoibos Anes, and they were also redeemed from Mitzrayim, so they're obligated in Dalit Kosos for Rashi, and the Rashbam over there says, no, that they, not that they also, they were the Iker HaGu'ula, they were the primary source of the Gu'ula, and therefore they're Chayiv. There is a Machlokas Tanoim if children have to drink Dalit Kosos because of Afin Hoibos Anes, or maybe not, because they don't really appreciate wine anyway. So the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Taf Ayin Beis, Siv Tezvav, paskins that children over the age of Chinuch should be given 4 cups. Now, 4 cups of what? We would certainly recommend not wine, right? Meaning probably 4 cups of grape juice. There is a discussion in Poskin whether the wine that you use at the Seder needs to have alcohol content. Can you use grape juice for the Seder? So it's a discussion in Poskin. Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted by Rav David Feinstein, was very makbid that it has to have some alcohol content, a very small amount of alcohol content, but it has to have some alcohol content. Sometimes you have like the low alcohol content wines and you may not get drunk, but you get sick, meaning like they're so sweet and they're, but Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva where he explains that he thinks grape juice is wine l'chadchila, and you could use it for Dalit Kosos l'chadchila. So kedai hu lismo chalav in certain circumstances. A person has to be wise about this. Sometimes even someone over the age of bar mitzvah, but they're a teenager and they're higher risk of getting too involved in alcohol. So one has to be very careful about giving 4 cups of wine to a 15-year-old. You know, that's something that's not first. You know, it's obviously illegal, also probably, but it's unwise in the extreme. I just got a shaila last week. Someone just asked me, I got an interesting Pesach shaila. Just got a shaila last week that a guy told me that he's having Seder with his brother and sister-in-law, and his brother is a recovering alcoholic. And his sister-in-law told them, just by the way, when you come to our house for Seder, there's not going to be any wine, it's going to be grape juice. So he called me, he wanted to know how much he should push back, that there should be at least some wine with a little bit of alcohol content. How much should he push back? And what's the answer? Zero, not at all. Do not push back. Have grape juice, and that is fine, right? Meaning kedai hu Rav Asher Weiss lismo chalav in that case. Now, how much wine must be drunk? So the Mechaber writes that ideally it should be a revius with each cup, but you could be yotze with a rov revius. If the cup is very big, according to the Ramban, you still need to drink rov hakos. And according to the Ran, you could drink a rov revius. So it's 2 days from Shulchan Aruch and Siman Taf Ayin Beis. So we try to be machmir for Shitas Ramban, but b'diavad we're sumich on the Ran. The best way to satisfy all shitos is get yourself a cup that rov of the cup is rov revius. Meaning, if you get a gigantic cup, so and you're going to try to be makbid to drink rov hakos, and you have like a 10-ounce tumbler, you have a 7-Eleven big gulp or whatever, right? And you're going to try to drink rov hakos. So that's not going to work out very well for you. But if you want to be choshish for all the shitos to drink a rov of the kos, so get a kos that's a revius. So then the question is, how big is a revius, right? So that is an interesting question. So it's simple. The Gemara says a revius is a quarter of a log. What do you think a revius means? Is a revius a log? Okay, but how much is a log, right? What exactly does that mean? How do you figure it out? So the Gemara Pesachim and the Rambam say that revius can be measured as the combined volume of the width of 2 thumbs by 2 thumbs by a height of 2.7 thumbs. So if you make a little square, a little cube, not a cube exactly, but 2 thumbs by 2 thumbs in length and width with a height of 2.7 thumbs, however much liquid fits in there. The Gemara Pesachim also says that a revius is the volume of 1.5 betim, an egg and a half. Problem is, Nadav Yehuda points out in the Tzlach and Pesachas Pesachim that the two methods of measuring yield very different results. The measurement of the thumb times yielded a result that's twice the size of the egg measurement. So either eggs have changed in size significantly or thumbs have changed in size significantly. So the Nadib Yehuda says it's highly unlikely that thumbs have changed in size significantly. So we have to conclude that our eggs are much smaller than those of Chazal, and therefore when a revius is required, we should really take measure it based on three kibetzim of our eggs, and not the 1.5 that Chazal tell us about. The Mishnah Berurah writes that since many poskim disagree with the Nadav Yehuda, the Aruch HaShulchan and the Chazanish and others, we're only choshish from the Nadav Yehuda when it comes to daraisas, but not when it comes to derabbanan. So how big should a revius be? So for daraisas, the minig is to be more machmir, to have a bigger revius, and for derabbanan, a smaller revius. The Rav Moshe Feinstein held that the larger of those two shiurim is 4.42 fluid ounces, and the smaller of the two shiurim is 2.9 fluid ounces. We're talking pretty small. The Chazon Ish held 5.07 fluid ounces. They say that Chafetz Chaim's Kiddush cup held 5 ounces, and Rabbi Sol Salanter's Kiddush cup held 4.1 ounces. So you have like a Maisa Rav of what these Kiddush cups actually held. So if you have a Kiddush cup that holds 5 ounces, you're probably pretty safe that if you drink Rove of that each time, so then you're having a Rove Revius and a Rove Kos, and that would be very good. Now, going through the actual seder. So Kadesh, we start with Kadesh. When we make the Kiddush, Shulchan Aruch says you should say the Kiddush after Tesa Kochavim, because all of the mitzvahs halayla are supposed to be done at night, and one of the mitzvahs halayla is Dalet Kosos. So since Kiddush is also one of the four Kosos, it should all be done at night. Once Tesa Kochavim arrives, you should do it right away. You should not delay in making the Kiddush, because you want children to stay up for as much of the Seder as possible. So a lot of times, I often find that my Seder ends a lot earlier than many other people's Seder. And I don't think it's because we say fewer Divrei Torah, or because we have less, we probably have less singing because we're really terrible at it, but I don't think that that's the reason. I think it's because we start on time. And I think a lot of people just huck around for like, half hour, 45 minutes before they start the Seder. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to start like as soon as you can. Obviously, you're not calling the shots very often, certainly at your stage in life, and Kal v'chomer at my stage in life, you're not really calling the shots, but really it's ideal to be able to try to start as soon as possible. Now, there are different minhagim about who says Kiddush. How many people here have a minhag that everybody around the table says the Kiddush? That was always my minhag growing up, but it's apparently, I always thought, like everybody, I always thought my parents' minhag was the only minhag, until I always tell chassanim when they get married that you're the first time your wife has to have a seder at your parents' house, it's traumatic. It's a traumatic experience. They're using the wrong vegetable for karpas. They're singing all the wrong tunes. They don't know how to do anything right. Right? It's like a traumatic experience. You have to be very sensitive to that. But the Shulchan Aruch Harav writes in that only the Baal HaBayis should say the Kiddush and have everyone else in mind, because in general that's the way we do Kiddush. That's the way you're supposed to do it. But Rav Amadras Melech, have one person do it and be motzi everybody. However, many of the minhag that everybody says the Kiddush along with the Baal HaBayis, and the explanation they give for the minhag is that they want everyone to start the Seder by saying the words with their own mouth, Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim, that everyone should be able to say it. Now, you should have in mind, the Mishnah Berurah points out, that when you're saying Kiddush and you're drinking the Kos, that before making Kiddush, you should have in mind that you're fulfilling both the mitzvah of Kiddush and the mitzvah of drinking the first of the Dalet Kosos, right? Certainly, L'chadchila mitzvah srichas kavana. L'chadchila, we try to have kavana for the kiyum mitzvah. So you have to know what mitzvah you're doing. So when you say Kiddush, you're actually doing two mitzvahs. You're doing the mitzvah of Kiddush and also the first of the Dalet Kosos. Chazal instituted a Shechiyanu on the day, and we do that together with the Kiddush as well on both nights. If you forgot to say a Shechiyanu on either night, the Mishnah Berurah writes in Simtav and Gimel, you could say it at any point during the Seder, but really the ideal time is during the Kiddush. Hard to imagine someone would forget. They're usually reading right out of a Haggadah. So we go to Orchat. So we wash hands the way we normally do for bread, but this time it's not for bread, and we don't say a bracha on it, right? We don't say a bracha on Orchatz. They say the Maisa of a guy who washed, and he said, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokein Me'al Cholam, Asher Kedushon Mutsos V'Tzivanim. And he stopped. And they said, what are you doing? He says, it says right here in the Haggadah that you don't say Al Matil Sadaim. So he said the whole rest of the bracha. So no, you're not supposed to say any part of the bracha, even the Baruch Atah Hashem part of the bracha. So the reason for the washing is that when they were noig to mentara in full force, the hands had to be washed before you ate anything that was tibula b'mashke, anything that was dipped in a liquid and was still moist. So nowadays, Mishabur points out in Simon Kufnul Ches, we're not makbid about this anymore, but at the level say there we're specifically makbid about this, and we're about to dip a karpas into salt water, so we want to, it's tibula b'mashka, so we're going to want to wash our hands. Question is why? We're not makbid about it the whole rest of the year, so why are we makbid about it suddenly on Pesach? So most of the poskim chayyadim, the Aruch HaShulchan, say we do it to make the kids curious, so they'll ask questions. You're not saying a bracha anyway, so it doesn't. No, they'll ask questions. The Netziv in the Hakdama to his Haggadah Imre Shefer says that you try to make the entire Seder as close an approximation of what the Seder was when we had a Korban Pesach. So when we had a Korban Pesach, we were obviously knowing Tumah and Tahara, and they would have to do it then, right? And that's the Netziv, the same Netziv that says about wearing the kittel. They would wear a special garment for eating Korban Pesach. Rabbi Yisrael Reisman sent me an email last week. He said, I saw a shayla I thought you'd appreciate. There's a, that was what we call a T4. So, you know, bragging that Rabbi Yisrael Reisman sent me an email. But I was hocking him about something, and he had to say no to me, so he figured he'd throw me a bone. But there is a he sent me a shayla from Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger in the Shalas of Chuvans. Apparently, a couple hundred years ago in England, a bunch of British soldiers showed up at someone's house last minute on the night of the Seder, and they said, you're feeding us, because they're allowed to do that. And now this Jewish family had 15 soldiers, I think said high soldiers, 18 soldiers sitting at their house on the Seder night. So the soldiers were in for a big treat. They had karpas, and they had morar, and they had everything. And then it came time for the afikomen. And they weren't sure, are we allowed to give the non-Jewish British soldiers the afikomen? Because what's the svara? Not to? So you're allowed to give him non-Jews, not allowed to partake of a Korban Pesach. So you're allowed to give him the matzahs. That's what the Shaila asks when we give Yosef Schlesinger. So the question is, how much is it really like the Korban Pesach, right? To what extent do we treat it really as if it's Korban Pesach? So the Tziv says we try to reenact everything as best as we can, and therefore we wash on the Dover Shatibullah B'mashka as well. Rav Reuven Margolios in his Haggadah says that it's also a way of showing cheiros, to show the level of cleanliness that even the tiniest amount of food that we're going to wash for, that's also a derech cheirus. The Taz in Simen Tafayin Gimel says, what do you mean we don't do it the rest of the year? We should do it the rest of the year. Haraya, we do it on the Seder night, so of course we should wash the rest of the year. And he said we should at least adopt the chumrah for Asar Simei Tshuva. If it were just an issue of accepting an additional chumrah, then why don't we do it during Asar Simei Tshuva? Elamai, it's not just an additional chumrah. It's really a din. You should really do it. Okay, I don't think that's the practice. Who washes? So it appears from most achronim that everybody should have to wash, because the halacha is Netil Sidayim and Davar Shetibula B'mashka applies equally to anyone who's eating the food. However, there is a Yekesha Minhag that somehow my family ended up with also, that only the one leading the Seder washes, maybe to make a hacker that we're not really makbid about this la halacha, it's just as a way of remembering what once was. The purpose of the karpas, which is a vegetable, the Mishabur writes in Tafayin Gimel Siv Kat Mechaf Aleph, is to dafka dip a vegetable to inspire the children to ask manishtana, because it's unusual to dip vegetables prior to the meal. And the question then becomes, okay, so he asked. Now, what do you tell him, right? What's the answer? So the Pri Chadash says that there is no answer. The point is that a lot of times you'll find when people ask questions, they don't really want an answer. They want to hear themselves ask a question. They want to know that they asked a good question. Sometimes, like if you speak in different places, someone comes over to you and asks you a question, you have to size them up quickly, right? Are they a person that wants an answer? Do they want to hear, well, it's a great question, so that they can tell the next rabbi they asked that question to? I asked Rabbi so-and-so and he didn't know the answer, right? They want to be able to say. So, so you get kids involved in asking the question, what's the answer? A candy is the answer, right? And they're perfectly happy with that. The Tosfos in Pesachim writes that the purpose of the carpet is to avoid having to make a bracha on the maror, because you shouldn't make two brachas on the same mitzvah, because veinos and mitzvahs chavilos. That's obviously a major lamdish discussion about that, why that's chavilos. Okay. Which vegetable should you use for karpas? So Mishra Brura writes, we use a vegetable called karpas. It was the name of a vegetable. And for the symbolism, the reason vegetable that we use karpas, Mishra Brura writes, symbolism of samach perech. That samach is some multiple of shishim ribo, of 600,000, and perech, we did avodas perech. Rav Shachter pointed out that it's a little bit funny that we have a remez based on an Aramaic word, an Arabic word, whatever that is. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes that karpas is most likely celery or parsley. And in my family, we always used potatoes, because potatoes are more delicious than celery or parsley. But really, anything that is hadama would work. They famously, Rav Taitz Zichrono Levracha, had a minhag that they would use
bananas,
because it was the night of chinuch, and you could train the children that banana, even though it grows on a tree, is really a hadama. The danger in using potatoes is that potatoes are delicious, and even though the Rambam paskens you're supposed to eat a kazayis for karpas, most poskim assume, not like the Rambam, that you're supposed to eat less than a kazayis of karpas. That's what the Shulchan Aruch and Tafai and Gimel Sif Beis and the Shmur over there says. You eat less than a kazayis, because if you eat more than a kazayis, you'd need a bracha achrona, and you want the bar priyadam to still work on the maror, so you don't want to have to make a bracha achrona. So the Chazon Ish and the Gra and the Brisker Rav held like, they followed the Shitas HaRambam, they eat more than kazayis. It's not like, you know, a lot of times people get very frum about this, like they're like the kazayis police around the table to make sure that nobody's eating a kazayis. No, you can't eat that. It's not the end of the world. I mean, there are worse things in Judaism that need to be solved before people eating a kazayis of karpas. But ideally, if you're asking what to do, probably the more appropriate thing to do is to eat less than a kazayis of karpas. And then you have the whole rest of the Seder, but we only have a half hour and I got to give shiur next door. So everyone have a chag hashem v'sameach, have a wonderful yontif.